It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for waking up and tuning in to the Todd Leonard Show. I have the great honor today of having Pastor Cary Gidron Sr. from the Windy City. Pastor Gidron is doing amazing things in Chicago, and I was touched by his humanity when I learned about what he's been doing in Chicago, helping the homeless, creating the Lincoln's Hope Memorial Shelter Foundation, and just doing so much, giving all the glory to God and just doing amazing things. So we're going to have a great show. Pastor, are you with us this morning, sir?
Bless you, my friend. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Pastor. And, you know, as you know, I've been going back and forth with you, realizing you're waking up an extra hour early to join our wonderful audience. And that means so much. I know that a lot of people like to sleep in on Sunday. I know yourself, being a man of tremendous faith, probably get up anyway pretty early. But thank you again, Pastor. So I wanted to, talk to you about all the wonderful things you've been doing. And when I learned about your story, I was like, I'd love to have you on one day. So it means so much. So why don't we do this, Pastor, for the folks that don't know too much about you. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing and really kind of your life's journey in terms of how you got so spiritual and found God.
Absolutely. First of all, let me say thank you, Brother Leonard, for inviting me to be on here. You're such an amazing man. I'm so grateful to God for all that he has done in your life and he is yet doing. And again, I want to thank you and show great high appreciation for you to even consider and look in our direction. Well, the truth is I am the youngest of six children. My mother and father, they're both passed on to be with the Lord, but the late John, Reverend John and Brenda Gidron. I grew up as a young kid in the Inglewood community in the south side of Chicago. And we had a lot of hard knocks there growing up in Inglewood, seeing a lot of different things. In my family, I talk about my new book that was just released July 2nd of this year, entitled Promoted by Betrayal. I talk about how in my family, I grew up in that type of family as far as my aunts, uncles, cousins, and so on and so forth, where Jesus was not so much the center of attraction, but I grew up in a family where drugs, gangs, and so on and so forth became the lifestyle of many of my family members based upon their choices. I was determined to do different, to live different, to operate different, to break generational curses, and to see life different. And don't get me wrong, as I say, even stated in my book, Promoted by Betrayal, my family to me is one of the most amazing group of people in the world, but everybody have made different choices. And growing up in Inglewood, because we saw so much gang activity, I lived right in the Mecca of Inglewood, which is at 63rd Street. And so we were right there in the heartbeat between the gangster disciples and the black disciples. And we were running from one corner to the next corner just to be safe, ducking and dodging gunshot bullets and all of those things. And I just wanted to do different. So all of my life, I've been different. I've been kind of like David in the Bible. I've been that one that was chosen out of my brothers to do different and to have a set assignment on my life. And so with that, I chose that path and that direction. Went through school, operated all the way through school, went as far as getting a degree and then an honorary degree. I was bestowed an honorary doctorate and so on and so forth because of our work and our humanitarian services. But even as a child at 13, 14, I was a community activist, and I've been a community activist ever since that day and time, marching, leading marches, fighting against the violence in our neighborhoods and community, social justice, the whole nine. And so that was something that has always been in my blood, which has brought us to where we are right now.
Yeah, so, Pastor, I mean, obviously, you've already said so much in a short period of time. Your dad, your late dad, God rest him, and your late mom, your dad also was a pastor in the community?
My father absolutely was. My father became a pastor right after his mother passed away. And I was roughly at that time about 8 years old, and my dad had begun to preach, and then I began to follow his path. Actually, at 10 years old is when I actually accepted my calling to minister the gospel. And literally, at 10 years old, I was preaching to a full-fledged congregation.
Wow. So, Pastor, this is really, you know, remarkable, because you talked about the violence that you grew up with, but something inside you rose above at such a young age, and you became a leader. Someone at such a tender age gave your life to God, and obviously, I would imagine you adored your dad, but what made you think so spiritually and become such a leader among such chaos, and obviously everybody's in the street, the young kids, unfortunately, you're mixed up with, as you said, it was the mecca of the violence. Do you have any idea, looking back, what was it inside that made you rise up above all that?
You know, if there was words I could put to it, I would. It was just this hunger, this dare to be different. You know, this dare to not want to stay in the path. And it was the leading and guiding of my parents. My father, he was determined out of all seven of his children. He had six boys and one girl. And my older brothers, then I'm the baby. And so my older brothers then had already created their pathways. And my father, his guidance and his determination was, you're not going that route. You're not going that direction. And so he would kind of shelter me, protect me, and guide me. Even as a young man, if I got in trouble in school, my father was a steel mill foreman. He had rolled above all the way up to superintendent, but this man will take awful work, do you hear me? And come and sit in my class just to make sure that I'm doing what I needed to do. What a hero of a man. And he taught me the importance of life not handing you anything, but going for what you believe in, walking and standing for what you believe in, and not looking back. He literally taught me the trade and the pathway of doing life different, because he had experienced so many things in his life. He wasn't always a preacher. He experienced the jail. He experienced different things. And he said, I'm not letting you go that route. You've seen some of the things your brothers them have been involved in. And my brothers were protective of me in that sense too. So I always had an environment that kind of sheltered and steered me different than what I was born in. I was saying, you can be born in Inglewood, but Inglewood doesn't have to be born in you. All right? So you can go through hard knocks in life and be born and raised in hard knocks in life, but it doesn't have to be in you. You can stand on the outside of hard knocks in life and look on the inside and change what needs to be changed just by who you are. You have control of the trajectory of your life and your destiny, and I've always stood on that, and because of those guidance, I'm able to make that change and do different in my life today.
So, Pastor, I mean, obviously, I mean, your dad sounds like a great guy. I mean, talk about really making a commitment to be involved in their children's life. Obviously, no one's perfect. It sounds like all of us, you know, he made some mistakes, but he learned a lot from it and really instilled a lot of those important values, life values. And in terms of being so young, and we're going to kind of go through your life, but I wanted to go and think about this. So you're like 10 years old. Now, all your other friends are probably out on the streets doing their thing, probably getting mixed up in the wrong direction. And here you are as a great example. What was it like? I mean, you probably stood out among all your other friends. I mean, you're on a different path. What was that like at such a young age to really emerge from all of that craziness? What were your friends saying?
Well, the truth is, it was different. It was lonely at times, because you had to step out of what you wanted to do and attach to what was calling you. And now that's powerful what I just said, but it's true. I literally stepped out of what I wanted to. I wanted to be the kid running up and down the street, doing different things, you know, enjoying life. But what was on me was pulling on me so hard that I didn't have a children's life. I actually, make reference in my book Promoted by Betrayal, how I was a full grown man with a grown man's body operating like a little boy. So I still had that little boy in me that wanted to live, but I didn't. And so my friends, them, they never judged me. They just called me Preacher Man. And I was known out through the neighborhood as Preacher Man. If I wanted a girlfriend, Preacher Man. I ain't dating you, you Preacher Man. You know, so even that wasn't affecting my life. With being able to properly just do the things as a young person, but I just adjusted. It was, for me, it was norm. You know, like it's normal for a kid to have a ball and play softball. That's normal to him. For me, being involved in the community at such a young age, preaching the gospel, traveling, that was another thing. I was on the road a lot in the 80s, just traveling in the 80s and the 90s, traveling and preaching the gospel. So it had became a norm for me. Until this day, I still have that part of me that just want to be exciting and that wants to be spontaneous in life, but I still have that part of me that calls me to minister. Leonard, I've preached, and this is crazy, but this is the truth. I have a box of obituaries. I have preached over 460-plus young people's funerals in my career of preaching the gospel. Mind you, I've been preaching now for 34 years. And it is mind-boggling that I have never really had that youth life, which affects me till this day, if you don't mind me saying. It's the truth. It affects me because I have five amazing sons, four biological and two, well, six sons, because I have four biological and two that I adopted. And the truth of the matter is I don't even know how to relate to them in certain areas and certain places in life because I really didn't have that childhood life. So I have that downfall because that affects me. But, hey, again, my boys understand, they adjusted to it, and they love their dad.
So, Pastor, they're blessed to have you in their life, and God bless you for adopting, you know, two wonderful kids, too. The world needs parents like you, certainly, and you're a great role model. You said something, you know, Pastor, that's striking, you know. So this show airs in suburbia. You know, I'm blessed with two young boys, and we live in Morris County, New Jersey, and it's probably like light years away from the realities at times to the Windy City, Chicago. As great as that city is, there, as you just touched on, the violence is so sad and cuts across so many parts of the wonderful city. You just said something, though, Pastor, that really I got to follow up on. Is you've already been involved and served as a pastor for 460 lost souls, these youngsters who had the whole life in front of them. Cut down, I'm assuming, by violence. What kind of toll does that take on you in terms of just, you know, your humanity and you being a man who's so close to God and having to basically conduct services after these tragedies?
Now, you know, that's a powerful question. It's part of the reason why I'm not doing a lot of community activism about violence and so on and so forth as much as I did then, because it did take a toll on me. It took the kind of toll where I didn't sleep. I was stressed. I was, it broke me sitting in front of mothers, preparing their children's funerals, getting things together, trying to coach that mother and father through the pain and the agony of saying goodbye to their child for the last time. And it did weigh on me, and it became a weight. Thank you, Jesus. I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
No, no, Pastor. Listen, I mean, you're a man of great spiritual enlightening, and certainly you feel so deeply about the loss of life, and that's why the beauty of, you know, Pastor Gidron, you care so much. And I didn't mean to bring something up so painful, but this is the reality of the world, too, and I think everybody has to understand that.
No. It's okay. Sometimes it just hits me to the core, because I think of the countless of times when you're sitting there and there are no words to say. There are no words to say to those parents or to those siblings, because their loved one has been taken through violence, unnecessary, senseless violence. And there are no words, and you're sitting there trying to find words when you can't. So the most you can do is just let it, just share the tears with them and share the pain with them, and hoping that we can get through this. So it took a long toll and a very hard toll on my life, to the point that my pastor, the Bishop Robert Lee Evans, and my father, they said, listen, you got to cut this loose now. And my wife, who I've been happily married to for about 20 years now, she was like, hey, we got to cut this loose. This is affecting you too bad, where you're not sleeping, you're not eating, you're running here, you're running there. And so I end up eventually just cutting it loose. I still do some community activism, but not as much. I feel like now the activism that I do, it has to summons me versus me going after it. Does that make sense?
No, I understand, certainly. Right.
So that's where I'm at now.
So, yeah. No, I totally understand, Pastor. And you talked about community activism and things you've done. You know, you have your ministry, right? You're doing God's work through the Carrie Gidron Ministries. I know you have the Gidron Global Ministries. And during the show, I wanted for our listeners, if they want to reach out and they're touched to, in their heart, and you're doing so many wonderful things that we're going to speak about in more detail this morning, how would they reach out to you, Pastor? Mr. Gidron, do you have a website, or how would they reach out?
We do. We have an amazing website at www.gidronglobal. So that's G-I-D-R-O-N global, G-L-O-B-A-L.com. So that's gidronglobal.com, G-I-D-R-O-N-G-L-O-B-A-L.com. And then, of course, our email is CareyGidronMinistries@yahoo.com. So that's CareyGidron Ministries, MinisteriesAt yahoo.com. Those are contact ways to contact us. That's the best way to contact.
No, right, and you've been doing some.
We're on Facebook. Let me say that.
Yeah, Facebook. There you go. I mean, there's no.
Yeah, we're on Facebook at Carrie Gidron, CareyGidron. You can pull me up. I have both a public page and a personal page on Facebook, and we're on Instagram as well, and we are on YouTube. So.
You have mastered the social media, you know, Pastor. You might have to give me some pointers. I mean, you're all, as they say, you're all up in that, and that, which is great to spread the gospel and your wonderful work. You know, when I was preparing for the show, I love to research. So I like to kind of learn some things. You know, there was a very, very, you know, almost tragic situation where a police officer was shot, I guess, near an IHOP, and you were actually, you know, interviewed about it, and it was pretty remarkable. Can you tell just briefly about what that was and what that meant to you? Was it a sign from God?
Well, you have done your homework.
I tried to. I mean, my audience, I got a lot of highly educated folks out there, so I want to make sure I'm looking like I'm doing something. So what was that? Can you tell us about that situation at the IHOP?
Absolutely. So about 2 years ago or so, I was in Indianapolis for a conference, and I was the keynote speaker at the conference. And it was crazy because I had just said to the congregation and the group of people, I said, God is so awesome. This is literally hours before this event. I said, God is so awesome that if a person walked in there with a gun, all of our lives will still be spared, right? Less than an hour later, we left the conference. We go sit down at IHOP in Indianapolis. We're sitting there and we're eating and we're talking with some pastors, my brother pastor from Ohio, and another pastor that drove down, and another young man who was driving me. And we're sitting there, we're eating. I have his son, his 13-year-old son there. And out of nowhere, some young men walk into the IHOP to rob the IHOP. Gunshots ring out. And all I could hear was footsteps walking. Everybody's on the floors, under the tables. And literally, I wasn't being heroic at all. Something just said, sit there. And I sat there and I heard the footsteps coming. I said, well, God, if this person's going to kill me or shoot me, I want to see him face to face. And so I heard, literally, it was like you could hear, like audio, like it was enhanced through auto or something, you audio, you could hear the footprints coming towards me. And I stood up and turned around. When I stood up and turned around, the person had shot, literally ran out of the door. Out the door, and the sheriff, one of the off-duty police officers came in, and I said to the gentleman then, and I said again, you're not going to kill us. Everybody got up, and we were looking around, and not one single person was killed or harmed in that restaurant. God covered us and protected us, just as he had said in hour at the conference before we got there. He had manifested in less than an hour that with over 30-something gunshots, we were, I think the bullets was just ringing out, and it almost seems as if it was like 30-something shots. But however, we were spared, saved, and protected. It was a sight unknown, and it was the power of God.
What a miracle, Pastor. And it's interesting. I mean, I'm trying to set, you know, the stage for that, and just what an incredible story of just the glory of God and protecting you and everybody else in the IHOP. That was an amazing story. Obviously, that was something that, you know, when I was reading about you, I was like, that's just a fascinating situation.
Yeah.
You know, Pastor, you touched a little bit earlier about community activism, and I understand, obviously, you were discussing a little bit about your role now in the community. You've done so many things for the community, and you lifted up the community. You still lift up the community. Where do you get the sense of community, why you feel it's so important to be really a vibrant and a critical part of the community? Where do you think you got that that feeling inside?
You know, I got it because I knew that one day I was going to be a father, and I wanted to make life better for my boys, to be honest with you. I didn't know if I would have boys or girls, but I knew that I didn't want them to experience what I experienced growing up in Inglewood. And I knew that I had a charge to do something different, to take action, and to produce life within their future, in a sense, by help doing my best to participate in creating a different pathway. That may sound selfish for others, but it wasn't selfish. It was reality for me. When you ducking and dodging bullets in Inglewood, and you're living in a neighborhood where all you can hear is people dying, or you see a 10-year-old boy named Marcus Adams who was shot in the head 10 years old in your neighborhood right in front of you, you know, and you're seeing this kid's brains on the ground. There's something in you that sparks and say, this cannot be life. And so you want to make a difference. And so what I thought would be personal now no longer just became personal, but it became a hunger. It became a desire, and it's no longer about my boys anymore, my future children. Now it's about everybody in my neighborhood. It's about where I live. It's about changing, transforming, making a better community. You know, I always said I was going to either be three things. I was either going to be a comedian, I was going to be a politician, or I was going to be a preacher. But it looked like the preacher won.
I think you got a little bit of everything, a little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll in you, Pastor. On a serious note, I mean, you obviously seen the firsthand of the violence, the randomness, the senselessness, and, you know, one of the things that, and it's a hot button topic, Pastor, and I realize that I know there's no magic potion to solve all the problems, but I love the fact that you're really trying to be so engaged in the community, because so many people care so deeply about all the cities, and all the violence in Chicago, sadly, seems to be at times to be the mecca of this senseless violence, especially with the youth. What can we do together as a society, you think, to do what we can to stop this senseless violence and to get guns out of hands of the community in terms of just, you can't even go out, it sounds like at times. You got to worry about to even go to the local grocery store. What are your thoughts on that?
I created an organization called YRAVE, Youth Response Against Violence. We didn't get it off the ground at the level that we wanted, but there were three things that were core to help putting in, or at least putting a cap on the violence in our community. Number one, everybody taking ownership of the community. We all have to take full ownership of our community. We have to know that this is my home. This is my community. If you notice, when I speak, I always speak, and I've always used the terminology, my community. No matter how bad Inglewood was reflected or looked upon, Inglewood is my community. Inglewood is my home. Inglewood is where I was raised. Number two, we have to be willing to parent outside of our households. So you have to parent your household well, but you got to be willing to parent those children that are walking up and down the street, that are in your neighborhood. Some of them have parents at home, some of them don't. But your love, your kindness, who you are, the reflection of who you are, makes a difference in them. And then number three, we have to be willing to be responsible. So we have ownership, we have the love of parenting our community, and then we have responsibility. If you kill someone, I have the responsibility to turn you in. If I know that you've harmed or committed a crime, I have the responsibility not to be on a no-snitch code, but I have the responsibility to let people know that this is the one did it. We are going to expose you. We're taking a stand. So when you do that, you change the lifestyle and trajectory of your entire community. You literally make it known that we are a community, we are a family that stands together, pulls together. And then we got to get even with, and I know you're probably going to tap on it, but even with everything that's going on in our day and time now, with the brutality and all of those things, we have to become one. Got to get beyond color and race and all of that. And we have to become the God race, the human race. We have to become one. We have to have a mutual respect. I may not always agree with you, but I can respect you. I can love you. I can treat you well. You're never going to, even in your own household, you don't always agree. But what you have that keep your household together is called respect, love. And if we can get that, we will change not just our community, but we'll change our nation. We'll change our nation because it's just as simple. We're not going to always agree. but we can respect, we can love, we can embrace, and we can empower each other.
No question, Pastor. I got to give you a big, loud amen to that. And we're going to take a very short break and be back in 30 seconds with Pastor Gidron and follow up on this fascinating discussion this morning.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So welcome back, everyone. So Pastor Gidron, I would be remiss because, you know, when I brought you on, the subject we're talking about right now, it's sensitive, but we got to really talk this out for a moment. I love what you just talked about, which is we're all part of the human race. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. I really believe this down to my core. We're really in this together. You know, there's no question at times if there's police brutality, that's got to be totally eradicated. Everyone who's responsible for violating people's civil rights, they have to be fully accounted. The full weight of the justice system has to be on their head. I really believe that. But on the other hand, there's so many wonderful police officers serving us so ably, protecting us. And to put everybody in it and saying they're all bad, defund, it makes no sense. You need the police, but you obviously need major reforms where it needs to be. But more importantly, it is the idea of everybody's caught up on polarizing. And I love the idea of unifying, bringing us together, and bringing like a gentleman of your unbelievable character on, which talks about everybody being part of the human race and talking in a very uplifting spiritual way, in a very frank way. Because I think that times people just go into their own little corners and they don't really want to hear each other and they don't respect each other. And that's one of the things that, you know, I love social media. Obviously, I can tell from your number of websites, you're an active participant. But even great friends of mine, if I bring up anything, all of a sudden the civility goes out the door. And there's a personal attack on your character. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I just want to talk it out. I'm not looking to impugn your good name. I just want to understand your viewpoint. And somehow now, the second you even raise an issue, people are attacking you. And I don't think that's the way it should be. What are your thoughts, though? I mean, I know you talked about your involvement in your community, and you take such a big stake in it. And I always believe if you want to make things better, you got to get involved. And you certainly have been doing that, you know, because a lot of people, to use like a football analogy, they sit on the sidelines. They don't want to get dirty, but they want to criticize. Well, you know, look, I know people that could criticize all day and wonderful issues, but we'll step up and let's solve it together. What do you think we can do, though, further, Pastor, to heal the country and to unify? Because I think that's what's so missing in these days, nowadays.
I believe that one of the number one things we can do to heal our country and unify is to realize that we all bleed together, the same color. Now, what I'm saying makes a lot of sense, Brother Todd. In other words, we're all in this together. We're all experiencing this together. This is the time when you put aside whatever your differences are and whatever your isms and schisms may be. And this is the time we pull together black, white, brown. It doesn't matter. You know, I just believe that when we focus on the real issue that is at hand, and all of the other issues that is plaguing our nation and our country, fathers, homes without fathers, you know, the homelessness that is plaguing our nation, the violence, whether it's white on black, black on black, white on white, however you want to look at it, it's there, it exists, and we start healing our nation and our communities, and then healing each other, learning how to love each other. You're going to have, let me tell you something, I love police officers, let me be clear. And there are some really, really phenomenal good police officers out there. and then there's bad. And we can't allow the bad apples to spoil the whole bunch. We got to learn how to handpick what is bad, remove it, deal with that, and uphold that which is good. I think that it's going to take a lot of training and developing with both officers and the community. You can't just beat the police up and beat down the police and upraise the community, and you can't just beat the community down and upraise the police. It's going to take training on both sides. The community learning how to properly communicate when stopped by the police officers, and police officers understanding the importance not of a job, of a community.
No question. You know, Pastor Gidron, we had the great honor last week. We brought in Trooper Tabor, Richard Tabor, New Jersey State Trooper. I mean, wonderful guy. But, you know, he came out of Elizabeth, New Jersey, and he talked about the Pioneer Projects. And these were rough, tough streets. A lot of people, like you touched on in Chicago, a lot of violence, you know, maybe not to the extent of Chicago, but it's a rough city. But he talked about raising himself up and becoming a role model, and he served our great country in Iraq. He also then became a state trooper in 2014. But what really fascinated me was he reached back into the community and didn't forget about where he came from. So he goes back in there, and what he does, Pastor, I think is a beautiful thing, and amen to Trooper Tabor, is he brings the police into the community, so there's that relationship that they're starting to build that trust, right, between the community and law enforcement, because for whatever reason, we're not doing enough of that, and we have to do more. We got to get everybody together. They got to see each other with respect and understand what we're talking about. So, I mean, we could go on and on with this, and it's so important, but I want to talk about your humanity and about homelessness, which also touched me to the core, Pastor Gidron. When I learned about you as a person, I learned you almost were homeless. And tell us what that was like, and then how fast forward, we're going to get to Tent City in a moment, but tell us what it was like when you almost found you and your family homeless.
Well, that was an experience beyond measures. I had a wonderful job at the time. I was working as an assistant branch manager for a bank. That bank downsized. In doing that, they wanted to move me out to a branch that was roughly about an hour and a half one way and an hour and a half back from my home. So basically 3 hours of commute. And it was something I could not do. With that being said, then I had no other branch to go to, and so I was let go. And being let go for about 2 years, I began to live out on my savings until I could find another place of employment. In the process of that 2 years, as we lived out our savings, we got to the point that we just did not have finances and funds to continue to go on. So then my rent and mortgage and stuff started going behind. And in that, I said, okay, God, I don't know what to do. I had turned to the churches. I had turned to the bishops and the pastors and all of them, and nobody could help me. Landlord was extremely kind and lenient, but it came to a point where, hey, we got to be paid. And with that being said, we end up going to court. I go to court, and to make a long story short, the judge had his head down writing something, and he heard my voice, and he looked up. Now, this judge was a white judge. He wasn't a black judge. He looked up, and he said, wait a minute. Don't I know you? I said, I'm not sure. He said, yeah, I do. He said, I saw you on the news, and you was doing such, such, such in the community with a community margin. I said, yes, sir, that was me. He said, okay. He said, I'm going to ask you a question. What do you want to do? Now, the landlord is standing there. This is a true story. Landlord is standing there. And the landlord said, "What?" Yeah. He said, sir, what do you? I said, you know, all I'm asking, I put in for a job. I got to letter of acceptance. I'm just waiting till I start, and I will pay this man back every dime. I said, we just fell on hard times. And the landlord is just standing there and just say, I tell you what, give me 30 days and come back, and we'll receive the case then. And if you comply, we'll throw this out, and then he can make the decision. The landlord, no, I want an eviction. Judge said, well, we're not going to do an eviction today. And so, make a long story short, within that time, I was able to get the money. But here's the painful thing. Me and my family were at the threshold. Our things were packed. We were being threatened. We received these letters saying, you guys got to get out. You guys got to get out. I am losing my mind. I am trying every which way I can to find some type of funds. If it's picking up a can and collecting cans, God, I cannot be in this situation with my wife and my children and not sleeping, not resting. And lo and behold, somebody remembered something that God has allowed me to do in the community and gave me a second chance to make life better for my family.
Beautiful. So obviously you were able to find employment and straighten it out with the landlord. So I want to talk about something that I know is near and dear to your heart and your mantra, Pastor. And I love when people pay it forward. You know, and I think people need to do that more. You know, I brought a family on. They lost their treasure, Christopher D'Amico. He was only 10, lost in a horrible accident, boating accident. His parents joined us, and wonderful people, Chris and Laura D'Amico, wonderful people. But they talked about kindness and paying it forward and doing nice things and the ripple effect. And if you do something right, you don't even know when it's going to come back to you. But that good karma has a way of kind of enveloping when you need it the most. Almost like a protector. I want to talk about Tent City, because a lot of people here in suburbia don't really understand what that's like. Lay a foundation for us, Pastor, about Tent City, what you were seeing when you were working. What was Tent City, and what did you do to rise up and help?
But see, that's where the change came. When I stood at the threshold of homelessness and I was just there, I wasn't out there. I was at the threshold of it. And I saw the pain that it had caused just on my marriage and my children. It was affecting their schooling and so on and so forth. Here we are now at a place that we're back on our feet. Got a good job. And I've been at that job now for almost 7 years. And life is changed around, right? So we're driving, and while I'm driving my bus, I see all of these people under viaducts. I said, what is this? What's going on? This is in the heartbeat of our Lakeshore community, where you got nothing but wealth all around the neighborhood, and then you got all of these people living in tents and viaducts. And I felt the call. I felt the change. I felt the need that we got to do something differently. Well, at the time, I didn't have a facility where we could do anything as far as housing. So I went home to my wife, and I said, babe, I said, all of these people are out here on this strip. And they're homeless. I said, there's even little children out here. One of them had a four-month-old baby in the tent with them, sleeping in the tents, on the streets, in the cold. My wife said, well, what do you want to do? I said, baby, the first thing I want to do, I want to go and fix them a hot meal. And so at that point, we fixed a huge meal. I mean, everything, mac and cheese, greens, ham, you name it. And we set up tables. And we begin to service them. I said, the next thing, babe, I want to get them portable heaters. And so then we looked in our bank account and we shared it with some friends what we wanted to do. We got some donations from them, and we began to pour out of our own personal bank account. And we were able to buy, at that point, about 110 heaters. These are portable heaters to keep the tents. And when you put these heaters on, it feels like you're in an oven inside the tent.
Hey, Pastor, I don't mean to interrupt, but for the folks that don't know what Chicago's like in the dead of the winter, I mean, what are we talking about temperature-wise? Because talk a little bit about how bitter it could get.
Well, it's so bitterly cold in Chicago in the heartbeat of the winter that literally you could walk not even a full block and literally freeze. That's how cold it is in Chicago. Your hands are freezing, nose are freezing. And these people didn't have socks. They didn't have gloves. They didn't have hats. They didn't have heat. They were living there with rats running back and forth through their tents, food everywhere, trying to survive. So that's when me and my wife, then we decided just to take leadership. And we called friends. We started connecting with people out through the city. We started posting it on social media. And we were able, at that point, Brother Leonard, to really change the lives of individuals. We had four people that we helped change their lives and got them jobs, helped them get an apartment, and those individuals are doing well even now to this day. And this started like in 2014.
Wow. Well, God, I mean, this is a great example, Pastor Gidjon. Well, I feel really intelligent now bringing you on, albeit early in the morning for you, to tell the story, because you're working as a bus driver. I mean, you're obviously a very proud man. You're putting money, you know, in the bank. You're putting food on the table for your family, a lot of love. But you're not, you know, a very wealthy person. I'm talking about in the bank account, not with the good Lord, because obviously you're beyond, you know, financial success with that. But you were able to, for whatever reason, you knew there was a need. And one of the things that I was preparing for the show, which I was thinking about, I like to ponder these mysteries, is like, where was the government? I mean, you got people, you got to know where your people are. I mean, obviously people knew they were living in tents under the viaducts. I mean, they know it's the bitter of the winter. And here you are, a bus driver, stepping up, taking money out of your own pocket. Not a wealthy man, like I said, financially. What do you think really got you? Like, just got you, hit you to the core, like, hey, honey, like you're telling me, like, hey, honey, like, we got to do something. When no one else really cared. I mean, nobody stopped and, you know, like, wait a minute, this is crazy. I mean, you're talking about Lakeshore Drive, very, very wealthy folks. They obviously would see it. They didn't do anything about it. So where was that humanity? What lit that fire inside?
It was more so of an anger than anything.
Yeah.
It was the anger that we have a mayor who was at that time Rahm Emanuel, and we have a community of wealth. And instead of wanting to help these people, they were pushing policies to get them out of there, to get rid of them from a Vidoc. You know, oh, we don't want them in our community. And that angered me. And so we began to shed light. We sent out press release, had media to come out to deal with this situation and expose it to the point that it actually started shaking the city. Next thing I knew, aldermen and different ones, city councils, started getting involved in the fight to help the homeless. And that's what we wanted. That's it. That's all. Nothing more, nothing less. We wanted to help these families and those that needed to help and wanted to help. We wanted to be able to provide them. So what happened was eventually the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, did get them from under that particular Vidoc, and he sent out Department of Human Services and those that needed sheltering and housing. He provided that through the city, but it took us rallying. It took them saying, CTA bus driver, pastor and father, and who's, it took that in the news media in Chicago pushing this so heavy that I was reached out to and said, well, what do you want us to do? I said, I want y'all to get them someplace warm to live. Get them some food, help get them revitalized, rejuvenated. Everybody didn't want it, but there were a lot of them that really wanted change. I had one guy that was standing under the tent because his wife passed. And watch this. He was a college professor, and he just didn't want to live in his home anymore because he lost his wife and his children through an accident. And so life just became bitter for him. And he didn't want anything anymore. But he would lock his tent with a lock and get up and go to work every day.
Wow, that's an interesting story.
To help him. He was burdened. He was broken. He didn't need you to judge him. He needed you to pour into him, bring life back to him. What kind of services do you have to provide for a person like this? Because he doesn't need to be homeless. He goes to work every day, but he's broken. He don't want to live in a home anymore that reminds him so much of his family unit that he once had.
Incredible.
Then I had another young man, real quick, if you don't mind. I had another young lady with a four-month-old baby. Me and my wife paid for her and her baby for 2 weeks. I have a copy of the hotel bill. We paid for the hotel for 2 weeks for this young lady and her baby, newborn baby, to have a warm, sheltered place. And then we got in contact with their family, and the family saw what we had did for their family on social media, seen the young lady's face, contacted us and said, "That's my family member. I want to bring them home." And she brought them home.
Beautiful story. You know, Pastor, I always think about things, about bringing hope to the hopeless. And that's what you were doing, man. That is a beautiful thing, Pastor. God bless you and everyone that stands behind you. You know, one of the things I was doing in preparation, once again, is I was watching on some of these TV interviews, and I could just see how authentic and genuine your heart is about helping these folks who really just needed a hand up, a shot in the arm, so to speak. And one of the other things that was interesting is there's black people living in the tents. There's white people living in the tents.
Yeah.
So everybody's conception of like who could end up in a tent is like really it's an eye opener, you know, in terms of really what your mission is, the Gidron Global Ministries. I wanted to talk before we conclude about something that I know is near and dear to your heart, which is the Lincoln's Hope Memorial Shelter in honor of the late Lincoln Scott, who gave so much to the community. Tell us a little bit about that mission, one of your passions, which are many, about what you're trying to do. What's the goals of the Lincoln's Hope Memorial Shelter?
Absolutely. Just as we tap into that, I want to say this to people. One of the things I want, even with this interview today, Mr. Leonard, is that people dismiss the myth that everybody who is homeless are on drugs, they're murderers, and they're thieves, and they're crackheads, because that's not true. There are some people who have really failed to a place of no return, and they really need help. Lincoln Hope Memorial Shelter Foundation was started from the heartbeat of us helping homeless people in honor of Dr. Lincoln Scott. Lincoln Scott was a West Side patriot. I mean, he was a leader par excellence in changing lives and helping the homeless and creating shelters, going above and beyond to pour into the lives of people outside of himself and his family, but really bring life to the people. He's now going on to be with the Lord. Our golden intent is, number one, our vision is to open up a new shelter in Chicago that will provide 30 beds for the whole family that's homeless. What I'm talking about, the whole family, is a cluster of family that knitted, that mother, that father, and that's children. We have shelters all through the United States. We have shelters out through Illinois, but no shelters that actually house the entire family unit. They'll hold the mother and the children, but then the father can't live with them. We want to change that. If you're a married couple, you are a mother and a father with children. We want to be able to house that entire family unit and then create a line of stability for that family where they can now get back in society and become productive citizens of our society. Number two, it is our goal to purchase this facility and that is suitable and conducive to such a vision and provide 6 months of to 1 year of sheltering for these particular families while at the same time providing life supportive services and intense training which includes but not limited to implementing a daily 2-hour in-depth classroom instruction and practical hands-on experience job search program, work placement skills such as problem-solving, decision-making, and teamwork, and providing overnight temporary sheltering for 50-plus individuals on a first-come, first-served basis within a second phase of our vision. Also, it is our goal to literally be able to not, we know we'll never end homelessness, but really put a dent in the homelessness, not just in Chicago, but around the world. By operating a homeless shelter and changing lives that are conducive to families, we will provide habitation to the homeless individuals and their families within our city. According to recent surveys in Chicago alone, we've had over 140,000 people to be homeless. Now, that number has increased, not decreased. It has increased, where we are constantly seeing people homeless and broken. And I'm so glad that we have a mayor, Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Hopefully she'll reach out to me, and I can reach out to her. I've done that once before, so hopefully she'll respond. Mary Lori Lightfoot, who is now taking on the burden as well to help in homelessness. It's ridiculous. And everybody don't want to be there. Everybody don't deserve to be there. And some people that are there need help to get out. And that is our goal, to give them a new start, a new direction, and to really change and transform their lives in the community.
Incredible cause, you know, Pastor. For the folks that, and we're going to have to finish up this incredible episode and show today with you, if they want to reach you and stand side by side with you and lift up and give hope to these folks, give hope to the hopeless, and to lift up the homeless community, which is, I think, so important in these times that we're living in. How do they reach you, Pastor?
Absolutely. They can go to GetRonGlobal.com and click on the Lincoln's Hope link. We have a full link that shows photos. It has also a donations link for those that will continue to support our efforts and our goals. And maybe there's somebody listening to the sound of my voice, Leonard, and listening to your show, and they say, you know what, I want to buy the building. It would be a miracle. We need help. We really need help and support. And the other thing is, you may not be in Chicago, but there's homeless people in your community. See who it is that you can change. If you have lived this entire life on earth and you have changed nobody's life besides yours, then you have only existed and you have not lived.
No question. No, and I agree with you 100%. And, you know, keep up your amazing work. So, Pastor, I just want to say thank you so much for what you do every day, that you really are a beacon of light in some of these really dark, challenging times. To lift up someone in need, to lend a helping hand, to do it from the heart, to be part of the community is really a big part, a really a major step forward in solving these problems. And we know they're not going to be solved overnight. But guys like you, pastors and people involved in the community, that's what it's all about. It's about giving back. And like you just said, if you go through life and are not helping someone, you're missing out on so many wonderful, beautiful things. So I just want to say, Pastor, God bless you, your family, all the local parishioners, your ministry, you know, the Lincoln's Hope Memorial Shelter Foundation. I'd love to have you on again in the future, where we can rejoice that your dreams have come true and this beautiful facility has been built and people are there and thriving and turning their lives around. So God bless you, Pastor, for everything you do. Is there anything else you want to say in a very, very short time? And I apologize, because I know you speak like me. Once you get going, you keep on rocking and rolling. Any last parting thoughts in the last 30 seconds?
Well, absolutely. I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you to your audience. And again, I'm praying that someone would help us. Maybe a Walgreens has a building, or a CVS have a building here in Chicago, and they say, you know, we're going to help this organization. Lincoln Hope Memorial Foundation. It's causing great impact, and we need that support. Connect with us. Connect with me on Facebook, on social media. I am a pastor, so most of our content is all spiritual in most cases, but also connect with our website, with Lincoln's Hope. Again, we just published a brand new book entitled Promoted by Betrayal, The Tenacity to Be Exceptional. I want people to go online and get that book today. It will be a blessing to many lives. It's not just spiritual. It's a memoir of my life. It talks about a lot of my personal experiences, things that I experienced, but it also talks about the changes that we have made, and it encourages people through hard times to live again. So thank you so much. I count it a great honor and a joy to have been with you today, and I appreciate you.
It is a joy, and once again, when you said Brother Leonard, something inside rose up in me too, because I consider you now a brother, and that means a lot to me, Pastor. So once again, God bless you. For the folks, next week we're going to bring on Terry Connolly of Nourish New Jersey. We're going to talk about folks that need food to live and to be able to help others in need and make sure they're properly fed. I mean, once again, in the world we live in, we don't realize, but people are going to bed without not having enough food. We can never let that happen. So remember this. We're all in this together. Love each other. Take care of each other. And I really hope you tune in next Sunday. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful day. Take care.